Did they go to feel fearless before all this stuff happened?
I don't think so.
Do you feel fearless at this point in your life?
No, I count on it.
What's that?
I count on it.
Count on fear?
Yeah, absolutely.
You.
Okay, glad to hear it.
Yeah, you under the weather, are we? Well, even fearless is what would you say? It's kind of a risky business. You know, because fearless has an enviable accoutrement of self is not going to turn out to be all that fearless.
As long as you're self, you're saying? I'm not talking about like the fear you get from oncoming traffic or something.
Right.
The neuroses.
Yes.
Some of us are beset by it.
Whatever it is that we refer to by the word fear, you know, in this case, right, psychological apprehension.
Yeah, not so much the in the moment amygdala response or the.
Yeah. Yeah, anxiety, mm-hmm. apprehension, projection, can't take it anymore, you know. I mean, the adhesion of what we refer to as fear occurs because of the nature of the identification that we become familiar with and loyal to. As a right, disparate creature,
desperately desperate,
seeking, right? Yeah. Seeking Susan, right? Creature. So the whole, all this huge inventory of fear creeps in, you know, loneliness, abandonment, ill health. Shunning, isolation, you know, homeless, mm-hmm. unloved, isolated, you know.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, as a biologic system, it's pretty clear that an infant does well by being lavished with healthy touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It helps the brain, the esteem, the senses, the boundary mm-hmm. fields process in a much more healthful, sustaining, independent, generous way. When this, whatever these are lavished with healthy, loving touch. Right. Probably the most important element of, you know, raising an infant is that. And without it, if it's, you know, withheld or done with trepidation, or if the contact with the infant is from a place of fear or insufficiency or violence or enmeshment of some kind, psychic or otherwise, then the what we call the, you know, biologic development is arrested. Right? Arrested development. So, you know, to dismiss that categorically is not fair and, you know, glib. But now as an adult, living with, dealing with, responding to the vicissitudes and challenges and wonderment of life, we can evaluate fear from a different point of view, if we're lucky. Mm-hmm. So all, call it mental or emotional truisms, are fabricated in the so-called moment through the filter of the past, the filter of conditioned response, whether it's behavioral or, right, reflexive or somatic, what have you. And there's nothing wrong with that either. You could say it's a gesture of how does one relate to the present rhythm and texture of their own first-hand experience. If we relate to presence, presently appearing presence, through the filter of conditioned mind, conditioned identity, justification, esteem issues, and a thousand other, possible insults, right? Then it appears that the burden of the past and the burden of our regret and the burden of fear and sorrow persist. Yeah. Maybe for a vast number of humans, they healthfully or constructively, you could say, respond to this ocean of sorrow with some degree of charm or relaxation or survivability or even thriving. That's cool. You know, maybe we'd love to be one of them. Then for a whole bunch of other so-called humans, they don't thrive in the context of their lives or the poverty of their lives, whether that's socioeconomic or racial or gender or middle child, or a thousand other forms of, right, being imposed upon. Not that there's a remedy for fear, because there's not. We'd like to think that there might be a remedy for fear, but there is not a remedy for fear of the kind we're talking about.
Mm.
Because that would suggest that you could thrive as a person, right, under the umbrella of superstition and belief, and be free from fear. I have my doubts about that as a successful equation for a living.
You don't think some people achieve that?
I have my doubts about it. I don't know. Some people might trumpet that as a, you know, spiritual or some other kind of accomplishment.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all the talking heads that write best-selling books about you optimizing your happiness, might claim that they, you know, live
isn't
without fear.
Isn't that the first stream entry kind of thing? You lose fear, not anger, and... Was it they want to become an arahant or something?
Arahant, yeah. Yeah, right. Yeah, you could follow, you know, a Buddhist model of mindfulness, of vipassana, of jhanic bliss, and the chronology of stream entry, so that, you know, you can... let everyone know how far along you've gotten, or at least in that tradition, you're encouraged to keep it all to yourself, lest your pride compromise your spiritual accomplishments, which it's likely to do.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
You can wear those t-shirts that say no fear
on them, right? Yeah, yeah. Well, true. Then you've got, you know, these enviable sports enthusiasts that risk their lives sometimes.
Yeah.
Sometimes in an irresponsible manner, and sometimes in a very responsible manner.
Oh, you mean like Evel Knievel or something like that?
Well, yeah, Evel Knievel's one way to go. You know, or extreme climbers that, let's say, before they tackle a serious wall unaided by equipment, they will have climbed that wall quite a number of times with absolute secure equipment, so that they can memorize both visually and body memory where they need to go when they hit certain challenges, you know, in the surface. So after a number of tries under safety, they will, you know, attempt that same route without the safety. And that's a responsible way of risking your life, because you gave it your best shot, right?
Yeah, I haven't thought
that. Makes sense. Sure. Yeah. Evel Knievel was... I think he just kind of enjoyed broken bones. I don't, you know, hard to know.
I just remember the interviews. He was always so sincere. It's like he was doing this profound service for people. You know, it's like...
Yeah.
He was so philosophical about it.
Yeah, I'm doing it so you don't have to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what, but I mean, he was like, mission and all that.
I'm sure he was, I would like to think that that was all quite sincere and true, and gave him all the gumption he needed to take on these, you know, miraculous feats, jumping over buses with a motorcycle. Well, here's the strange thing. You see, as you begin to recognize how quickly consciousness anthropomorphizes and then asks a sincere question like, can one be free of fear? You've pretty much, you know, put a wax seal on the continuity of fear. You see, that's why it's so tricky, this whole so-called liberation business.
Well, it's like fear's like one sort of universe, and there's all these other kind of universes. So it seems like it's easy to get caught in fear, but it's really not the whole picture. And then, you know, it might be gone in an hour or something.
Yes.
So I don't know if that's what you're trying to say about continuous, like... Like, what is it really? Is it part of that person? And is it the whole picture?
Let's accuse consciousness, not that there is any, of breathing itself into being from the vantage point of a separate entity. Consciousness, or the animating force, the impersonal animating force, that you could say is doing all this, not that it is, because it's really nothing's going on here, but you want to blame somebody for something. It gets too weird when you can't blame anything or anyone for anything or anything at all, and this is just fucking this, and you can dream it up as a person, or you can just slip right through the seductive nature of the dream and not go to personhood. Once you go to personhood, you swallowed the red pill or whichever pill, and then it makes sense that, you know, after being beaten up by so many insults, you want to figure out how you could be free from fear. But it's too late, you see?
You've already invested in it.
Yeah, it's already, you know, your favorite cousin. It's already your favorite first cousin, probably, with whom you're sleeping.
Lucifer comes up and says, look, it's right there. It's part of the deal.
Yeah, so this is why it's so, you could say it's so remarkably simple, and not lie to say it's so remarkably difficult at the same time, given the same body of evidence. It's so simple because you just don't have to sign up for anything. Anything. And still occupy the enviable or unenviable conditions of your imaginary life as you will.
You're suggesting that we're signing up at every moment.
See, yes, you are. Yeah, you really are re-upping. This contract that we make for embodied stupidity and retaliation is not lasting. It's actually not binding. So you have to make it over and over again. Yeah.
It comes quite naturally.
Doesn't it? It sure does, doesn't it?
It's like persistence of vision. I mean, pretty soon you're seeing things, you know? You're seeing things in...
Pretty soon you're seeing things. Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Uh-huh.
Are you getting your foot warm? Is that right? That looks like you have a cold foot. You want to get it warm.
I'm waiting a chance. Hello.
Yeah. Now, the value of this heresy is you don't have to wade through any liturgies, litanies, or superstitions to apply yourself to the unmanageable miracle of your present experience. Hello? That's the value, I would say.
No, yeah.
You don't have to go to unicorns or... Oh, sorry. That was the other week. Or psychics or ascended masters or priests, rabbis, popes, or celebrity know-it-alls like
Jim Carrey.
Like Jim Carrey.
I just watched him on the...
Yes.
Yeah.
That was funny. He was trying to convince Jerry of the sublime nature of reality, and Jerry wasn't very interested.
Jerry seemed kind of more enlightened than he did, I thought.
Jerry could be. Yeah. Jerry's so enlightened, he doesn't even talk about this shit.
Yeah, he was kind of like, and he's been meditating for like 40 years or something.
Who?
Jerry Seinfeld practices TM.
For how many years?
Since since his 20s, I think.
Oh, well, then he's way ahead of Jim Carrey.
Yeah.
I know
Howard Stern.
Yeah.
I know Howard Stern, but I didn't know Seinfeld. I would have. Yeah. I'm surprised.
Yeah.
He's the type of guy who wakes up and puts sports radio on, and he's just like, you know.
Who's that?
Seinfeld.
Oh, Seinfeld.
Yeah.
He's just.
Yeah, I mean,
he's happy to just,
yeah,
you know, whatever. You know, he's neurotic but happy. Kinda,
yeah. TM can help.
Yeah, that's the trick.
Yeah, that's it. Neurotic and happy.
Yeah.
We should all be practicing TM.
Because I saw him with Bill Maher, and he's like, Bill Maher's like, are you just happy to be insignificant? Yeah. He's like, yeah. But he's got his own TV show, so.
Yeah. So the downside of inviting our consciousness into a discovery with presence is the downside is what? Oh, I don't know, actually. The downside is you have to come face to face with you keep slipping away. You know, I mean, you've entered into an authentic transmutative process. That's the downside.
It's not in your terms.
That's right. Yeah. The downside is that this is going to work. That's the downside. It's actually going to work. If you start dilly-dallying in a playful manner with the presently appearing hallucination, you're going to start peering through it. And it's just going to mess with you. But it's been messing with you anyway, even if you don't peer through it. So rather than be a dupe, a victim, and a schmuck, you may as well pretend to be, you know, an interactive shaman. Give it a run for its money, right? You might as well give the hallucination a run for its money than being so mesmerized that you can't even lift a finger to reconsider the terms of your consciousness. Right. Yeah. And you can see how tricky and how seductive and how playful the world is. And all of the beings you can interact with in the world through how many different media. Yeah, so you're, at least in the technologized West, and even more so, and that's even occurring more in the third world, right? Technology distraction. And the psychic communication, right? I mean, the cell phone and the smartphone is kind of a still an external device that permits you to be somehow transcendently connected. Yeah. You have to refuse. This is odd. And not quite true, thankfully. You have to refuse the data field. Yeah. Because the data field is so rich and so formidable. It can wear such a happy face that you know, you think you'd be making a mistake to refuse it. So you take up residence once again, pretty much from moment to moment, as a separately existing locus within a infinite data field. That's called the self, lowercase, self. You're a locus, a receiving locus. Locus is probably better. Locus in a data field. And you fucking love it. But why shouldn't you? I mean, this rocks. When my mother's not complaining about what a poor son I am, and my sister's not giving me a new one because of my disappointing behaviors. Otherwise, it's, you know, it's lovely. But even the rhythm of ordinary life and distractibility, you can see that it has a, there's a taste of sorrow, there's a taste of insufficiency, there's a taste of compulsion, malnourishment in it. Yeah. Even being engaged by the data field, even with a lot of money and a lot of appointments and a lot of people caring for you and all kinds of things that you would otherwise think would relieve you of anxiety, turn out not to. Yeah.
Even if you've got it down, you start getting anxious. Oh shit, I might not get it down tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you're worth $7 billion, like Microsoft or something, you're still dependent on, you know, the global wealth accumulation and wealth parking systems for that liquid wealth to have reliable value. If you kind of, you know, and even wealth creation, like from an investment point of view or a World Bank, you know, or global economy point of view, it's like, what's at the bottom of all this so-called wealth? Shares of stocks, which own other companies or have cash in the bank, or there sure as shit isn't enough gold.
It's all a mirage.
Isn't it, ultimately? And it's a, you know, it's a mirage held together by perhaps somewhat flimsy, malleable, or manipulated belief systems. Yeah. I mean, if you have soldiers, bullets, and food, that's a certain kind of wealth. Right? And if you have soldiers and bullets but no food, well, that starts to compromise your portfolio. You know, or soldiers and food without bullets, you're back to square one again.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So it's kind of a fun adventure. I mean, we...
Food and bullets is the answer. Right?
Yeah, I think food and bullets is the way to go. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look how we live our lives. Look at the frames that we adhere to or assign or believe in when it comes to security, health, fun, wealth, money, sacrifice, what we have and what we don't, what we need to make sure that we have so that upon retirement we have as many years possible of gleeful autonomy and world travel. Or whatever the fuck it is you want. Model trains, you know, okay. I mean, I have a friend who has a brother who is, I think, at least nationally famous for his model train world in the basement of his home in Port St. Lucie, Florida. People come from all over to, on a Sunday or whenever, to file down to the basement and play with, run, or just enjoy the train orgy that he's got going on down there. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, it's, you know, it's a beautiful thing. It's fragile, of course, like whatever we got going on is fragile.
What
basement? I was thinking that maybe joining a convent or something.
Yeah.
It just seems like there wouldn't be any attachments.
I don't think they would take you.
Your attitude is not really convent friendly.
No, it's
not
okay.
You know.
You could try prison, maybe.
Yeah. Yeah. Who's in the next cell? The mouse. Sarah, really, she joined last week. What do you call her? Oh, the mouth.
I don't know.
She's She asks a lot of questions. She doubts everything. Her faith sucks. I don't know how she slipped in here. She really likes the sailor. That we like about her. Yeah. You know, the Native American tradition, which of course is, you could say, the world Native American tradition, not just the so-called America's Native American tradition, of sitting around the fire and just kind of weaving in and out of stories that don't really have a beginning or an end. They don't necessarily, you know, have a happy or there's no moral. It's just dreaming, you know.
Will they take me in?
They will take you in, mm-hmm. Definitely. You're a bingo player?
You're a bingo player?
You're good. B7? They'll take you in.
B1.
Yeah.
B-Love. That's the license plate of my...
Nice.
Whatever it is, sister-in-law. Oh.
Kyther's partner?
Kyther's partner. She's just like...
Yeah.
B-Fanatic. B-E-Love.
That's nice. Hey, she's not your girlfriend.
Yeah,
really. Well, we become, we're all very expressive, so each in our own way we become, you know, kind of effusive and attention seeking. Sometimes it's kind of charming and sometimes it's whoa, you know, it's a little much. It's a little much, you know. Uh-huh.
It's interesting how the world, if you want to put it that way, and actually it's just almost like a corporate world or whatever, that tries to keep capturing you with stories and things like that. I mean, certainly on the computer, on social media, always these things, and they have it so figured out what works for people. But I think it's like, it's like hyperbole, you know. My jaw dropped when I saw this, you know, frame number 26. You know what I mean?
Copywriters are gifted.
I mean, it's all this kind of stuff. And after a while, it's like, pick your fucking jaw up, you know, and quit being so shocked about it. You know, it's like...
Yes.
But it's still like, see, the worst car accidents ever, you know, it's like, oh, okay, no... Don't just give in to that.
Yes.
It's so easy to do that.
Yeah. I mean, the voyeurism of interest in our own unruly consciousness, right? I mean, you could say, what's ego? Well, ego is just the reflex of voyeuristic interest in what's appearing in you spontaneously. So the voyeurism is already systemic. You know, it's a systemic and lethal infection. It just takes, depending on where you live, you know, somewhere between 60 and 80 years to take you out. So why not with, you know, media and all forms of exaggerated entertainment, whether it's prurient or violent or puppies, right? Just, right? Sucks us right in. But the original voyeuristic impulse is here. And that's why, you know, you suggest, oh, look at the way that this dreams. Look at the geometry and the nuance and the mechanics of the dream and see if you can't, just for fun, withdraw from the data field, which is means withdraw from the voyeuristic impulse. Right?
All those YouTube channels, just that.
Yeah, that's right. Those are totally YouTube channels. Yeah, right. U squared tube channels. YouTube. Uh-huh. And you can see how quickly we inhabit our persona, our belief, our story, our charm, our attention seeking, our care, our altruism. So fast. We occupy the dream of ourselves very, very quickly. And what do we find? Well, everything is there. you know, disappointment is there, and regret is there, and lust is there, and the frustration of lust is there, or the satisfaction of lust is there, and all addiction is there, and recovery is there, and all the Buddhists are there, and all the Hindus and the yoga teachers are there, hot yoga, power yoga, ashtanga yoga, slow flow yoga, fuck me in the head yoga, you know, that really took off. Right? And I mean, you go, let's say you study Traeger work or zero balancing or one of these somatic things, and they just keep layering more healing, exotic healing, right, stuff on there. This vibration and that vibration and pituitary and the connection and the reconnection. You look at Gene Ong's, you know, portfolio of accomplishments, and you're going to see more and more exotic, right, entrees into ways that you could turn out to be a better person, whether psychically, spiritually, or physically, right? So it's never ending. You, YouTube, and the ways that we can conjure and occupy this dream, it has absolutely no limit. What fun.
Constantly changing permutations.
And it's so constantly changing that even though it may appear to be you once again, because, you know, your mood forms, your mood textures are familiar to you. The way you think and feel and, you know, what you like and what you don't and how you communicate with people and how you want to be known, right, and all that stuff. I mean, you're very, you know, familiar to yourself. And we actually get disoriented somewhat easily if someone that we know behaves even just a little bit off track. You know, it's like we go into a little bit of an alarm.
Because of our investment in that?
Well, sure, you know.
This is a dance.
Yeah.
This is who we are.
That's right. And we you could say unconsciously place each other in a certain context of, you know, safety and familiarity and, you know, yeah, he's always him and she's always like her and it's cool and I like that person or that person I'm ambivalent about or da 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 da. And someone starts going a little south or a little east or west or north and it's like, whoa! You know? Yeah.
Because it makes you, it questions your idea of what you think's going on. You have to kind of be like, whoa, that's not what my norm is, you know, or whatever. So.
Yes.
Seems like it jars something.
Yeah, you're jarred. That's right. So what happens if you... You can begin to see the nuanced refresh rate of your own persona. The nuanced refresh rate of this occurring spontaneously, impersonally, effervescently, and there's no investment. And you actually start to feel yourself completely relieved from responsibility and obligation. From consequence, you don't have to fight, struggle with, or justify anything that's appearing in your experience, right? You're not asserting, you're not proving yourself to anyone, you're not defending anything. You got this, whatever the fuck this is, just chilling. You're not under the influence of time.
Is that to say that this fractalization can ever slow down?
No. Well, who knows? You know, so far it hasn't. Right? I mean, to the best of our observation.
Our current existence.
Yeah. So far, it seems, according to this being existent for as long as it imagines itself to have been existent, I don't see the fractalization slowing down or ceasing. But it may not need to.
I almost feel like it seems the opposite. Like, to me, it seems like it's going so fast Like, because if you, in some way, when you're holding it static, it seems more static, and then that can seem more drug out. It's slow in some way.
Yes.
When it's just shifting, like, it's so fast. It's just incredible.
Maybe you see more the pattern than actual content. Maybe that's the difference.
Well, you're sensing, because you can't track this permutation with what we call thought. It's too sluggo.
That's why it feels, it's funny, you can't, I'm like trying, but it's just like,
yeah.
And it's like, fuck, I can't, there's no way.
You can't, no, thought is too sluggo to respond to your non-dual instinct or your non-dual intelligence of the fractal nature, the urgently expressing fractal nature that this persistently doesn't let up. But if you're not locking in like an F-14 on a target, and you're not referring to memory as an interloper or intermediary to try and sell you on what it is that you're experiencing, then, yeah, you're good. And it can feel like slowing down, but it can also feel like it's really frantically quick and impossible and too bizarrely vibrating to ever get a handle on it, and oh my God, you know. Yeah, you can go either
way. It's kind of seems simultaneous, actually, because
sure,
there is something in the midst of that that's just totally the same. It's just, the same, more of the same.
Yeah.
And that is what seems kind of calm and relaxed and slow, because it's just the same fucking thing. It's always the same.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, not like going anywhere yet. It's like so fast.
Yep. If no identity or locus adheres in your firsthand experience, you tell me, what speed is it? So we're, you could say, simply reinforcing, amplifying, conjuring is swell as well, that in a manner of speaking, before you adhere as a locus, there's whatever this is. And what's wrong with just, you know, doing a Thich Nhat Hanh on it? Breathing in, breathing out, breathing in, breathing out. This looks like some shit happening, but it's not fucking happening to me. I don't know if that's how his poem actually runs, but
something
like that. Yeah. And this is fun because you don't have to be invested in being free from fear. That is so 2014.
You don't have to be invested in being free from anything.
Yeah. You see, even the slightest hint of being free from a thing that you imagine has been an afflictive companion of yours is total bullshit. Yeah. Yeah.
I think I got that piece of book, No Death, No Fear, or something like that.
Uh-huh.
And I don't know. It's just like all the other books in here.
Well, sure.
I don't know what I was thinking.
Well, they have to be, because once you start popularizing reality through a framework that looks like words and spiritual aphorisms, well, you're dead.
Yeah. You're looking for a way out. You're looking for...
You're dead again.
The particle.
Yeah. That's why the you can read Krishnamurti and Nirsagadatta and probably Eckhart Tolle and, you know, a thousand other things, and you can be touched, you know, touched by a mood, touched by a certain hint of a liberation. some books and some writers of those books can pull that off. Some not so much. I never read The Road Less Traveled. Has anyone read The Road Less Traveled?
No. I think so.
M. Scott Peck.
Sure. Psychological.
Yeah, but like...
Real boring, real quick.
I see. Okay.
Yeah, it wasn't that exciting or anything. I don't even remember.
All right.
That's why it's The Road Less Traveled.
The book less read.
Yeah.
When I read every self-help book I could ever...
Yeah, when you got them all.
Yeah.
I got to a point when I just didn't want to see another Psychology Today magazine.
Oh, God, yeah, Psychology Today.
Yes, Psychology Today.
Right.
When that first came out, let me have this, you know, and it was like, ooh.
I read every book that Wayne Dyer read.
Yeah? How'd that go? Well, you're here, so obviously not that well.
Not that well.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
That's a lot of books.
How'd that go? Obviously not too well. You're here.
I mean,
not really.
Not
exactly.
Really.
Fuck you, Deepak.
Yeah. Deepak I liked a lot better than Wayne Dyer. I thought Wayne Dyer was preachy.
Yeah, I think I went to see Wayne Dyer's guru in L.A. I couldn't figure that shit out.
Who's his guru?
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, I went to see him. I still don't know.
I did his, he had this meditation where you meditate in the morning.
Oh, yeah, I did that one, too.
Which one?
And oh.
And oh, no, and then you manifest.
And om.
Yes.
Oh.
Two very different words.
And om.
And I think
it was
with an
om.
And you were manifesting?
Yeah.
What?
Like that,
exactly. What were you manifesting?
Well, I do remember.
Chocolate chip cookies,
whatever
I hope.
Whatever the fuck you wanted. As long as you did it in the morning, at night.
I remember manifesting, like, because I was living in Arizona and I wanted to.
Cooler weather.
No, I wanted to feel closer to my family, and then they came.
Ew!
Yeah.
Isn't there a cancel?
I don't want to manifest anything else ever again.
Isn't there a cancel somewhere and all that? That's like civil mind control, right?
Yeah. We're moving in.
Cancel.
Because they had a big fight, and after that, like, there were factions, like, my
really?
Brother and sister didn't talk for like 6 months after that.
All because of you.
All because of me. I shoot the manifestation.
You are God.
They all, you know, all this shit came out.
But they didn't know. It was you.
They, you know, my sister's like, I met somebody you used to know, and I heard that you conceived me before marriage, and my mother's
what?
Like all embarrassed. And that's
oh
the
my
thing.
Goodness!
Just don't do that meditation, whatever.
Not on your life.
I have a CD if you want to borrow it.
I want the CD.
How about you? Did you manifest?
No, I don't think I did shit. No, I think I just made funny noises.
You didn't like, were you trying to manifest or something?
I don't know what I was going to. No, I was just.
That's fun, too.
I mean, if I did try to manifest anything and fail miserably, I'm sure I don't remember any success.
I mean, it's nice to have... It's nice to have your angel hair... It's nice to have your angel hair al dente with just the right, you know, seasoning.
It's really hard to get angel hair al dente.
It really is.
You know, it just overcooks.
Oh, that's just too quick.
Angels, man, they scream.
Yeah,
they're in the back. They keep flying away.
So it's nice to have, you know, call it the culinary preferences. But when it comes to consciousness, you really want to be without. But you see, the fucking Buddhists and the people like that take it to a certain fetish level where to be without now has to look like, right, a deliberate commitment to alms, robes, and renunciation. You're like, no, stop. Being without has nothing to do with your life as a householder or anything at all. It's right. It's getting out from under the seduction of the voyeurism of mind.
It can't be enforced. It can't be a decision. It can't be a discipline. It rises up.
Well,
on its own.
Let's say, I mean, it can be all those things because they're all practiced that way. Right.
But it's the opposite of what claiming that you're reaching for.
Well, yeah, I mean, they have whatever deliverables they have, right? So if you end up with robes and a bowl, and if that nourishes you, then you get what that you get from that what you get. It could turn out to be liberation. Why not? I mean, there's no path, there's no line, because if liberation or something like it might possibly be so, well, it pretty much has to be hello. It can't be anything other than whatever this is or isn't.
I shouldn't speak for anybody else, but I think for me, you're all those trying to manifest all the crap that I've done. Underneath it, there has always been a looking for this.
Yes, of course.
That's always what I've been looking for.
Yeah, of course. What else? You couldn't possibly inspired to look for anything other than this. You're not going to find anything other than this.
We're just looking for love in all the wrong
places. Looking for love. Nothing for love.
Looking for love.
I mean, look at the impulse field that you call yourself, that we call ourselves, that one calls oneself. Look at the impulse field. And where the fuck is it going? What could it possibly be looking for? I mean, it's already completely replete. But there's, you could say, lack of recognition. So the impulse field, which is already awake with no accoutrements, can make it appear as if you've become individuated. The impulse field can appear to itself in what we call this meat factory as individuated. So the life of the individual commences with great gusto. And then the individual is like, this hurts. Ouchie.
Owie, owie.
Owie, owie. Boo-boo city, man.
I have boo-boo.
Boo-boo, I have a boo-boo. Turns out to be me. My boo-boo is me. And you want out. So the habit, then, is to try to either feign some kind of superficial renunciation, which is not going to fucking work, or to go the New Age accumulation route of as many 1111s as you can get your hands on. Yeah.
What's an 1111? It's a spiritual symbol from somebody, obviously.
You know, how many Mayans you can interview before the world goes out of existence. Yeah. Yeah. You know, an unsatisfactory life clinging unrelentingly to entertainments.
had many more guys.
Well, that goes without saying. Yeah.
So this is stupid. I'm always saying, don't say it's stupid, but anyway, I can't help myself. But
you may want to think about that then.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, say it. Say everything, stupid or otherwise.
Stupidity is safe with us.
Yeah, your stupidity is safe with us.
Well, I know I always talk about Buddhism, but okay, so Buddha, you know, this night where he's taking on all these...
Fright night.
Fright night for Buddha.
Buddha's fright night.
So is that any less, more illusory than just... what appears for us?
No, fright night was a metaphor of what's exactly appearing in you right now.
Like all the shit of a life crammed into a small spin.
Taking the most nuanced sip of consciousness will set you off into a profound hallucination.
So Buddha... Is Mara, then? Is it safe to say?
Yes, sure.
Well, you say that grudgingly, so it's not...
No, no. Well, it's fun. You can think about it in so many ways. I knew a dear friend. He probably doesn't consider me a dear friend, but most people feel that way about me when I think of them as a dear friend. So that's no surprise. He was an aspiring Buddhist and later became a renunciate. He wears robes. He's a Western guy. He wears robes. He teaches. He's lived in interesting places and taken... long walks across the country with a bowl, you know. And he's a real deal, kind of renunciate, you know, fearless renunciate guy. I knew him before he had become that accomplished, you know, as a renunciate. And we were talking about the Buddha Mara story, and he said, I feel so much compassion for Mara, and we just both lost it. We just started cracking up. You know, it was like a total flip on the whole adversarial thing with Mara.
Yeah.
He was like, wish I could talk to him. We went silly. His name is Jyotipalu Bhikkhu.
Wow.
And you can find him. You can find him on the internet, Jyotipalu Bhikkhu, and he's the real deal.
He's the real deal.
Oh yeah, I have no idea about the depth of his so-called realization, but when it comes to the uncanny intelligence that is weaves through the Buddhist pantheon, he's pretty deeply steeped. I would say that's a guy that, you know, maybe has been relieved from fear. Yeah.
A friend shared a quote with me last night from who was the Indian woman that escorting the Lois and Clark expedition to the West Coast?
Sacagawea.
She was quoted as saying, after having had, you know, a bit of exposure to the white people.
Yeah.
Something to the effect of, now I think I understand that, you know, the white people have a God that they don't think provides them everything.
Whoa. Nice.
That's so cool. Wow.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that's great. I mean, the Judeo-Christian universe, maybe including the Islamic universe, you wonder how deep the faith is.
Mm-hmm. Well, you don't have to go
in the God that's been created.
Just like come back here.
Yeah. Yeah.
We started with fear as the discussion point tonight. So
there you go. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. So despite our faith, we turn out to be loathsome posers that simply don't place enough faith in our espoused gods to keep us chill.
But that whole line of reasoning assumes a little vulnerable, measly mouth, physical self.
Sure, yeah.
So you gotta, like, buy into that Blog Talk and Herald to just be able to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Without elaborate fanfare or the negotiating of spiritual systems, here's your present experience. And though it can tease us into individuation, it might be concomitantly possible to feel that it hasn't teased us into individuation. From a somatic point of view, you could say that quality of listening has become diffuse, and the plenum of that listening is broader than the typical myopic reflex of mind. Thought, projection, time, space. Yeah. So your listening, which is not just sound, but it's, right, the entirety of the sensitivity of presence, is not taken in by anything that appears in it. So the listening becomes the palpable reality.
Even when there's words in the listening?
Yes, yeah. It doesn't, yes, they don't have to snooker you back into individuation. Yeah, but it is a strategic yogic endeavor.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Of course it is. Yeah, because listening reflexively becomes myopic, goes to, let's call it, the head or the neocortex, and entertains itself through loquacious projection. So the strategic yogic intervention is to return, you could say moment by moment, to listening as a diffuse plenum of availability.
The way of the open hand.
The way of the open hand. That's right. You got to call it something, because people won't show up if you just say, hey, just show the fuck up and we'll chill. Yeah.
I had to ask Jeff, is that the same hand
that he wipes his ass with?
That he used for a bitch slap.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, you suck people in with the open hand. When they get close enough, you go whack
with the Zen good slap.
Like, that's right.
That is the sound of
give your mind a good slap. So it's really that that's simple. When the brilliant certitude of listening, which you can't escape from, goes myopic and entertains itself through referential means, referential abstraction, then body, mind, and time and self are, it's an instantaneous apparition. Yeah, you turn out to be an instantaneous and effortless apparition when the impersonal energy of listening, right, is either seduced or hijacked into, right, emotive, psychological, referential permutation. Yep, instantaneous. There's no delay. Absolutely no delay. It turns out that ignorance or duality is just as non-dual as non-dual is. There is no opposite to non-dual. There can't be. Yeah. I mean, that takes a little more maturity, I would argue, but still. So you don't have far to travel to negotiate with or navigate religious or enlightenment systems like stream entry, etc., etc. Because the presence of your diffuse, non-subjective and non-objective availability is already fully mature and present. This takes attainment off the table.
That's fun.
Oh, yeah. It completely takes attainment off the table. And it also takes renunciation off the table.
To dive in?
Yeah. And belief and superstition off the table. It's not that difficult to feel your base nature as radiant disinterest, which is its own fullness, which is meaningfulness without consequence, without deliverable. We'll snap back to, call it, intrapersonal relevance in a jiffy, and then soak ourselves in responsibility and obligation, and then light the match. You know, being drenched in the kerosene of responsibility and obligation, we light the match, and we burn, right, from the sorrow field that time suggests. No rest for the weary.
I was thinking about that the other, like, you know, this cute little saying, there's never enough time in a day. I'm like, not looking for time. You can't be looking for time because
yeah.
You would just make up more shit to do. That's why you want more time, because you can do more shit. And then you would just say, there's not enough time. You know, it's like funny. You're like,
every horizontal surface that you bring into your home is going to get full. Yeah. Yeah. So this fantastic capacity for hallucination has its medicine bag of excuses is full to the brim. we will habitually and reflexively defer a journey into nothing with various forms of obligation and responsibility and if-onlys and what-ifs, and a thousand ways the mental field will put the brakes on its own dissolution. So you learn how to rest. Free from the reflex of hypnagogic self-entertainment, which is the field of self and the field of fear and the field of becoming and the field of time and the field of if only and the field of what if. Field of blame and accusation and regret. Yeah. You learn, you discover the aroma of diffuse attention. It has its own perfume, its own texture and signature. You become conscious of that texture and that signature, and you give yourself some kind of permission to rest there, here. You relieve yourself of the burden of having to defend and justify yourself. And then the reflex of, you could say, control dramas or control activities will also quite naturally relax.
Well,
I know.
Well, the whole thing is advocating that control.
Yes.
And really, and it seems to me that it's has nothing to do with the ego control and all that stuff that normally goes on.
Yeah.
Put it normally.
Yes.
This is something beyond.
Absolutely.
It's not a mental.
No.
Strategy.
Right.
It's not. I mean, if it would be, then you're off again.
You're off again. Yeah.
It's just. It almost seems like it's just something that happens, and sometimes it seems like it's just almost situational, or it's life just gets so screwy. It's like. Just go on. You know.
Yes. It's just this. You see, the abdication and abnegation of hallucination is, you know, amongst consenting adults, on tap. You know, you don't go running into the woods yelling, "Master, Master, I have arrived." There's a funny old story about that. You know, one of those Buddhist or something stories. "Master, Master, I have arrived." And the master looks, you know, I don't think so. You know, it's a subtle, I'm not quite so sure. And of course the devotee wanders off, absolutely dejected, right? Back into the woods and liquidates, right? Because no effort that you can make, no commitment, right? No nothing that you can do will result in absolute abdication and abnegation. So as the story goes, this particular lucky, ripe devotee dropped all guile. The next time he came back to the master's circle, walked in quietly, didn't say a word, sat down, drew no attention to himself, and the master turned and smiled. And we can see how challenging, I won't necessarily say difficult, but how challenging it is to wean ourselves from the consciousness of becoming. Because every guru that comes to town, you know, comes to entertain and create a new frenzy of novelty and reaffirmation of the suffering self. Oh well. you're on your own. No one imposes, right, hysteria upon you. No one can, you could say, grant you release from subjectivity. You have to feel it, right? You have to stalk it. You have to hunt it down. I mean, graces do come. But how can you attribute your liberation to another? You can't. You can't really say, oh, I woke up under Adyashanti and then he asked me to teach. It happens, but I'm like, oh yeah, okay. Sounds great. Consciousness is not an accoutrement, nor does it possess any.
Nor does it possess accoutrements.
Nor can it.
Consciousness is... almost don't even understand what that means.
Yeah, yeah, no, it's a foolish idea. Well, you know, we could say this remarkability of involuntary engagement. Some might say sentience, right? And everything that appears to or in this remarkability of engagement is consciousness. That's why Ramesh said consciousness is all there is. All there is consciousness. It was that, you know, gleeful revelation of inclusivity is all there is. But there's nothing that's inclusive of something. It's just inclusivity, right? It's perfect, perfectly radiant inclusivity. It doesn't resolve into anything but more inclusive, right? Radiant. You say it doesn't, it doesn't go anywhere. It's not additive or subtractive. It's not more or less or other. We think, right, from a human or egoic, so-called egoic point of view, there's more and less and other. And there's better and worse. And then I place myself in a, you know, somewhere on an imaginary arc of emotional well-being, physical well-being, spiritual well-being. And I really can't seem to place myself in all too favorable a place in any of those.
And there's the out there, you know, the out there.
There's the constant out there.
And so the out there can be mapped out, you know.
Yes. See, this is the hallucination of imagining yourself individuated in a volume. Because if you're individuated in a volume, then the myth of out there persists. Yeah. The myth of other than self persists.
So we're all just talking to ourselves.
No one else is listening to us.
Even when somebody else is talking to us.
Yeah.
We're talking to ourselves.
Yeah, sure. Yes, absolutely.
I mean, I can only hear my words coming out of your mouth.
Yep.
Because if they're only your words, then they're not mine.
Yep.
I feel like I'm high or something.
That's what I felt last
year. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah.
I'm talking just like
myself. Nice guy, sound good for a natural high.
Yeah, this is a natural high. You can ride around in a car, do this, and even if the cops pull you over, you're okay.
Yeah.
Really.
Uh-huh. I mean, I'm not okay, but I am okay.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Are you fuckers carrying? No, officer.
Just sugar.
Yeah. Well, it's a, you know, bliss as high, right? It's the already organic inhabitation. You don't get high. You get less stupid.
Yes.
You're already as high as a kite. You're already absolutely blotto on an LSD bender. It's the stupidity. Which makes you think like you're that you're not. Yeah. Uh-huh. When we peel away the stupidity, you get high. You just occupy what you are. This you could say sensitivity, this blossoming of diffuse non-directed attention, this release from space-time defendedness and superstition, vacuums all this stupidity off your shoulders. So you can get high. And this euphoria has a kick. Because once it's lit, it will have less and less patience for the likes of you.
Hmm.
And that's why it could appear as if waves of, you know, let's say some disorientation or tumult can manifest sometimes in what you call your life, because the euphoria which you involuntarily lit is not interested in you anymore.
The difference is now there's not that existential panic that there once used to
be. The euphoria, yes, the euphoria assuages organically the existential panic.
But in my youth, I felt that existential panic.
It might what?
In my youth.
Oh, yes.
Jesus, youth.
Yeah.
Even your youth, you can't find it now.
Yeah, yeah.
Not, it's, it doesn't grip me like it grips me.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
For you.
Oh, that's cool. Right. Why don't you give it a workshop?
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. When are you coming to my town?
I'm a long way.
What technique would you attribute this?
Like living just the school of hard knocks.
Books on tape.
Books on tape. Wayne Dyer.
Wayne Dyer's 30th book. I finally got it.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. You know, too many self-help-ish interventions start to layer more confusion on your already fragile sense of self, and you just end up with more pressure and more means of failing than you had before you read the book.
Yeah.
Before you read the book, because now...
Now you know, and you're still doing it.
Yeah. And now you've been told what to do and what not to do and how to feel and gratefulness practice and tenders and
yeah,
you know, all kinds of lovely things.
That's cute, but I'm not.
Yeah. and you haven't changed a bit. And you're really getting angry.
Those hardcore practices
are harder.
Those loving kindness.
Well, everything... works.
Yeah.
Every right vibratory push or pull will render a reply. So if you do serious metta practice, you will get a reply. You may end up being a metta junkie, which is not an unenviable way to live. I don't know whether it's going to bring home the mock bacon or not. I can, you know, how can you say? But everything that you do or don't do has a reply. I mean, you're in a curiously bizarre, creative and self-fulfilling erogenous zone of disembodied euphoria. Lift a finger and butterflies are urinating in South America. I don't think that's quite what they had in mind. Those string theory guys.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah. Or urinate and drown a butterfly. I don't, you know, I'm not sure.
Well, we can't do anything.
Yeah. But again, you know, the most... let's say, exciting way to find out about anything is to try it out.
Oh, yeah. No, I've been in the throes of, like, a real anger towards somebody. I've done that. It does seem
Yes. Right.
It did seem to help.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. What's
Oh, like the loving kindness practices? I mean, it's a neuropsychological, really, technique. You know,
you're not just sublimating all that stuff, and it's just like...
Well, it's interesting, because I know, like, with Shinzen, like, he didn't really teach that kind of meditation, and I think his people were like, you know, you gotta do compassion meditation or something. But he does more of like a Tibetan deity yoga kind of thing, where you sort of visualize some sort of Mary or Jesus or whomever you want.
Yeah.
Tara.
Alfred E. Newman.
You kind of merge or something. But he would say after it, like, you know, you're probably going to have a lot of negative stuff now as a result of, like, a boomerang. He was sort of more of like, you just do that noting thing and you don't even bother with the compassion. But he finally started teaching it, I think, because people thought.
They placed the demand.
Yeah, they placed the demand. He's like, okay, we'll do the Tibetan.
Oh, my God.
I don't know.
Excuse me while I hurl into a cup.
Yeah.
But no, I appreciate the rigor and the value of it.
Hurl into an angel cup.
Or hurl into an angel cup.
Perfect.
But there's like neuropsychological techniques where you take like...
Well, EMDR and tapping.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, Castaneda wrote about what he called recapitulation from the, you know, let's call it the Toltec thing. And the recapitulation wasn't just remembering events in your life. You had to cross, turn your head, I think, and also move your eyes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So you had to do an EMDR hemisphere shift while doing the recapitulation to reprocess, you could say, you know, belief systems or strong events that may have calcified in your consciousness. Yeah, calcified and somaticized in your consciousness.
Right.
So they were practicing EMDR back then.
EMDR
is a technique for following, I guess the therapists that are doing it these days use a light machine. So if your eyes are crossing hemisphere, yeah, while you're processing.
Full brain activity.
You can do it with sound too.
Yeah, oh, yeah, that's nice. Audible EMDR. Oh, that's real nice too.
I think
that's more
interesting.
Yeah. It's fun.
Well, when you sleep at night, you do that thing. Yeah.
Well,
you're dreaming, yeah?
I think REM is more random.
It's more random?
Than a routine, you know, left to right. It's like, whoa!
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Yeah, now there's this other thing too where you just move your eyes and they have all kinds of eye kind of exercises now.
It's not just you following the
characters
on the train.
Oh, I don't know. With the rest.
Chase any tail you can catch
in
your dream.
I mean, if you've ever seen anybody, though, they do look like they're doing this thing. Like, you know, even animals. Like, it seems like they're doing. And they edge you through the night.
I think animals do it more.
Yeah, like
they move more.
Become less distressing. Mm-hmm. So it's almost like you're.
Oh, nice.
Sort of
okay.
Working things out. Like,
I was like, I don't know, just tripping out on that today. Like, thoughts are going on, and I'm like, why the fuck would I be thinking about a conversation, like, so fucking far remotely? It's not even going to, no way in hell is it even going to happen remotely like that. I have no idea. And it's like, I'm like, well, it just dawned on me that it was kind of like a learning, it could just be like a learning process. Like, that's how this learns, in a sense. Not like learning a lesson, but just like learning, like a basic. Like the same way you learn to walk, it runs bizarre scenarios of like how it might respond, what it might do.
Like that.
It's almost like simulation training.
Like that movie War Games where you kept trying to had to figure something out. And you still watched
it. I haven't seen War Games, so I have to watch it. But yeah.
You're presently in a simulation.
Yeah, but it's just another kind of simulation within a simulation.
It's multi-layered.
Simulation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. You could say consciousness, right, is you know, the revelation of multi-layered sins. And the non-grasping skill, right? Just, you could say, breathes through all of the sims that appear absolutely impersonally and effervescently in what we call experiencing.
Because they clearly don't have anything to do with you. It's like just bizarre.
That's true.
I'm like, this just clearly doesn't have anything to do with anything.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what it has to do with, but it's definitely not has to do with us.
Yeah, if you're born body-mind, well, then you're fucked by sims. But if you start to notice how unincorporated you are, and develop some chops or confidence or relaxation in your unincorporated nature, the sims can all fuck off. They're not afflicting. So I walked around the lake the other day and I was not under the influence of anything. It's not like me. And I wouldn't say agonizing, but I was really whipping up a thought storm, imagining all kinds of scenarios for presenting
You were training.
I was training. I was doing thought training. Yeah. And, you know, normally you could say that would be kind of afflictive. Like, shut the fuck up, dude. And, I mean, 6 miles, you know, around the lake, 2 hours or whatever it took with a couple of breaks, this was pretty much what was predominant. And I just didn't care.
It's kind of fun
if
it's just...
You were able to let it go and just...
Well, there was nothing even to let go. It was just running sim tapes.
Yeah.
And it's just watching it.
Well, it's just not personal. It's like can be entertaining. You can watch it. You can laugh at it.
It has a purpose, too. I mean, if you want to call it the purpose.
Oh, who knows?
It's like what you're saying is training.
Yeah, I'm just, reflecting on how this, you could say, obsessive or theatrical thinking was going on. Clearly abstract projection of an event that has not and might ever never occur. Playing around with my imagination of all kinds of various personas, interfacing with the likes of me under this, giant abstract umbrella. And I was like, think yourself into it. Just knock yourself out.
Who cares?
So when you went home and went, just go to sleep.
Yeah.
Did it continue to...
No. No, it was just gone.
Fun activity to get you around the lake.
Yeah, it was kind of like, how are you going to get around the lake this time? Oh, I don't know. I think I'll think of this shit. And I think that as we start to relax into boundary free,
not in your head.
Even if your head is doing a bunch of theatrical thinking. Okay.
You don't have to feel attached.
Yeah, you don't have to turn it on or turn it off or enjoy it or not enjoy it. It's like
you were not selfish.
Yeah.
You can't make it easy.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I mean
it's sometimes like a bad street.
Sure. Right. Yeah, association and mentation are occurring, and if it finds a good theme, you might get some, mileage out of it. And that's accompanied by certain, emotional waves and, right, somaticizations of emotion or feeling, whether it's fear or confidence or impatience or, chilling, it's like, all right. It's interesting how all of this obviously is occurring, however it might be occurring, but without without the grasping or without drawing a line in the sand, right, from the vantage point of individuation, it dreams. You're not looking to get something, right, from the dreaming. Therefore, you're not really looking to interfere with the dreaming. And so it's a much easier segue, let's say, right?
Sure.
From, oh, this shit's dreaming. Hey, blissed out. Dreaming, you know, arguing, getting insulted. Right, talking to her hysterical parents. Whatever, you know. What can I say? I should live closer and be a better son. Not likely to shake that anytime soon.
Yeah, that's
there's nothing wrong with guilt. It could turn out to be a constructive motivator.
Feel the feeling and don't do it anyway.
Yeah, right.
Your mother has accomplished something.
Yep. She's subcutaneous. The reflex of strategizing and looking for a deliverable from your consciousness relaxes. Isn't it sweet to be free of the myth of a deliverable? Oh. No future, no preparation for future, no fear of future.
What's interesting is the old habits die hard or something, whatever that is.
Yeah.
I mean, there's still this like...
You can bring a habit to water, but you can't make it drink.
There's still this noticing.
Yeah.
You're doing something different than you used to do a long time ago or a while back.
Sure.
In other words,
yeah.
I'll be perfectly happy just driving without, with just the windows open. You know?
Yeah.
And I remember I used to like, I would, when I go on airplane flights and stuff like that, I'd be working.
Oh, yeah.
Or I would, and then later on I'd be get more into the self-help thing or something like that.
Yeah.
But I always had, you know, something to accomplish.
Oh, sure.
And, you know, even in the car, I listen to audio books and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, I may do that.
Right.
But just as likely, I probably won't.
Yeah, I like to drive around with the windows open with a little Grateful Dead on the, you know, on the Sirius and just fucking bliss out.
But there's this recognition every once in a while, like, hey, you sure you don't want to, like, listen to something? Like, tune in, see what the weather's going to be tomorrow, and, you know.
Yes.
What the news is, or.
Right.
What's the
yes.
plan? Are they still, is this commercial radio still as affordable as, you know, this was? You know.
Yeah.
That's why I find there a relief in some ways to be on an airplane. Like, I know you can do all kinds of things on an airplane now, but it's sort of like, there's nothing to do. You just sit there. Like, there's no options.
Fishing boats are like that, too. Maybe you should go work on commercial fishing boats. Oh, it could have the same effect as that.
I feel like so.
Yeah.
Do you remember that Seinfeld when, Elaine was with that guy.
Oh, honey, and he's just staring at the thing. Yeah.
So what do you think about nothing? You don't think about something.
Yeah, that's
nothing.
Yeah, I'm showing
that
on the airplane. I'm like,
honey. Yeah, I know. Putty's my new guru.
I'm trying to be more like Newman. Newman.
That's funny. That was great. I like the one where they had Bizarro World, and they had the that was a clever one.
They did everything backwards.
Backwards, and it was like
the storyline.
Somebody like backwards. Newman, I forget Ferguson, but he was like Ferguson, like he was having.
Oh my goodness! I don't remember that.
Yeah, like Blaine seeing another guy, and they're like Jerry and George and Kramer.
Oh, they have different names. Yeah,
but they're nice people, so I'm thinking Jerry.
That's worthy of funding.
Yeah, if you have Hulu, they're on Hulu.
What would I look up?
No. I don't know. I'll tell you. I'll put up a line of beer.
I'll never do it anymore.
It's worth it.
We could chip in and get a fan outfitted with, you know, TV. And we could all sit in the back and watch Seinfeld episodes while someone drives us around.
Beanbag chairs in the back.
I used to have a van with bags in the back. Yeah. And we, like, stop at Moo Burger and shit.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Well, we wore this pretty thin. Yeah, once we get down to recollecting Seinfeld episodes.
Yeah.
You're right. Oh, yeah, that's more than enough. Hey, thanks for joining us.